on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, September 30th edition, and we do everything we can each and every weekday to answer your questions and bring you information and ideas that may help you make better investment decisions at the end of the day and hopefully give you some ideas that you may have otherwise missed. And that's our mission on InvestTalk. And when the market gets into especially choppy mode, it instills a little humility in investors and market watchers. So have we seen a major correction we've been anticipating, or is there more drama to come, is the big question. And history has taught us that the stock market is not the best indicator of future movement of the stock market itself. No one knows when a trend up or down will end, but you do kind of have to listen to that trend. And you have to listen to the bond market. And in the past, the bond market has been a better indicator of stock a future movement of stocks. And bond investors tend to be institutions that have a lot more information than the average equity investor. And they have a great incentive to get it right, as the bond market is a lot less liquid. So if you pick a bond that is not exactly good credit quality, it's a lot harder to get rid of it. And the conclusion is that these institutional investors are very in tune with the economy, and when they push interest rates up or down, stock prices generally follow. And when I say interest rates, I more mean interest rate spreads. How much yield are investors demanding from corporate bonds, high yield bonds, you know, risky bonds compared to treasuries? Is it just a little bit or is it a lot? Just a little bit, well, they're probably not worried about credit risk. They're not worried about the economy too much. If it's a lot, they'd rather be in something safer like treasuries. Now, while all professional traders track the major stock indexes and the average investor, elite traders keep an eye on the bond market. Now, the best gauge for the bond market is the TLT, the 30-year Treasury ETF. When it goes up, it means treasury prices are rising and yields are falling, and vice versa. And then there's also the JNK or the HYG, which both are very broad ETFs that track the high yield market or the junk bond market. And this is a good indicator of risk tolerance in the marketplace. So you have to see what the performance of the market is, or HYG and the JNK, versus something like maybe TLT or IEF is even better because the maturities are maturity length is more equal to the JNK or the HYG. Now, a strong junk bond market means that investors are happy to keep risky portfolios and stay in stocks. Now, obviously, these relationships are not perfect, but they tend to correlate over time, meaning they may not be tick for tick, but the trends in the bond market will eventually flood into the equity market. And the trends in the bond market have not been good ever since really QE3 was ended, or was about halfway done. Remember, they tapered, and they about halfway through that was about June of last year. And that's when the market, junk bond market, really started to roll over. And you even saw a big sell-off back when or the tapering announcement by Bernanke in mid-2013 was announced. So they started to react a little early, because they know that they need to move sooner rather than later. right? They need, because the bond market is so illiquid, they can't wait until problems show themselves in economic numbers. They need to be able to anticipate, right? They need to be able to have time to liquidate their positions, and that's what they've been doing over the past year or so. And you even look back to 2009. The stock market bottomed in March, and the bond market really started to move in December. The high-yield bond market rallied in mid-December through the beginning of the year in 2009, then sold off a little bit into March. But you could see that there was really some good volume and some good indicators from the bond market that things were going to start to get better very soon, right? So it's just one good example of why the bond market is so important. And you should never argue with the market, but most investors think it only refers to the stock market when we're talking about the market. But there's markets for all types of assets. There's a market for homes. There's a market for commodities. There's a market for so many different asset classes out there. And professionals know these other markets, and especially the bond market is a better indicator of future trends. So just a heads up and some insight on what is really important. So when you go home and you turn on the news or you log into Yahoo Finance or whatever website you go to track the market or read about the market, hopefully it's investtalk.com. We do have the market tracker on there as well. But when you go there and you just look at the Dow, or for example, so many people, oh, the Dow did this, the Dow did that. I could care less, really, what the Dow does. Talk about it all the time. It's 30 stocks, price weighted. Doesn't make sense. Not a good index to really track. But the S&P, far more so. And even more so, the bond market. So just be aware of that and keep that in mind. When you're thinking about the market, don't focus on the Dow. Please, please, please. And are you a defensive investor? Are you in a defensive mode going forward? Have you made any changes in your portfolio mix? Let's talk about it. You can join in and bring your questions to us anytime you think of it, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 888-99 chart is our number. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Well, this is Jack Carr from New York. Steve, I'm a little confused. Some callers have requested information on certain stocks and entry points. It's very interesting how you evaluate them and make recommendations. One part I get confused about is you set an entry point and you say if it drops within 5 or 6 points, sell it. And I'm a little confused by that because I don't want to be a day trader. I don't want to buy to sell or take the risk of selling. And it seems like I'm in for the long haul. I should be buying positions in companies that I want to keep. And secondly, what happens with the rest of my stocks that I have, my other positions? Should I be looking at those at the same time? If they continue to drop, should I be selling them? And then it's kind of like, it seems like I'm back into the same old trick, sell when it's low, and we don't want to do that. So I guess I'm a little confused as to why you would tell somebody to sell if it drops within a week or so to a certain level. So would you please explain that? Thanks, Steve. Bye.
That's a great question. And that goes back to what we talk about is what type of investor are you? Are you a trader? Can you handle volatility? You know, most people want to be in the market and they love the stock market, especially when it's going up. You know, last 5-6 years, it's been going up, fueled by easy money, right? And it's been easy, but the market usually isn't like that. So it's usually more choppy, but it also usually trends. So when we talk about, oh, if it drops below this level, that means that support has been broken or a trend has been broken. And that means more downside is probably to come. And if you are willing and able to handle that volatility, and that's the type of investor you are, you're a long-term trader or a long-term investor, then you shouldn't worry about the technical factors too much. You worry about the valuation, the strength of the company, the strength of the company within its industry, the strength of the industry. The ebbs and flows of the economy and the stock market shouldn't matter that much to you. But you have to have the wherewithal and the stomach for it. Markets can get very volatile. It doesn't seem like it over the past few years, But 30% down moves in the market are very common if you look at history. Are you willing and able to handle that? At what level do you get sick and are you having trouble sleeping and you make an emotional decision? This is why we use that risk questionnaire that we have on our website for our listeners and for our callers and for our clients, because we want to know, okay, if the market drops X percent, how are you going to be affected? Are you going to freak out? And if you are, then you need to take less risk. And that's why it's very important to understand what type of investor you are. I'm Justin Klein, and I welcome your comments and questions today. InvestTech is made possible by KPP Financial. Our firm serves clients all over the country. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Now, does the current regulatory environment leave savers at risk of getting investment advice that enriches their advisors at the saver's expense? What regulates the financial advice you get? That's what we're going to talk about today, and some new rules that are coming down the pipeline that I think are going to be great for the industry, and I think are a great learning tool for everybody to understand what it means and the current state of the financial advisory industry and how it's structured and what kind of issues there are. So we're going to discuss that. Not only hopefully gives you some insight, but maybe you can spread the word to people you know so that they understand what type of advice they're getting and who to get it from. That's one of our talking points today, but I also have some others as well. One, I want to talk about elder abuse. And there was the cover of Consumer Reports this month. It says, a crying shame. Seniors and their families lose $3 billion a year to con artists. What can we do to stop them? So I want to touch on this article. It's very interesting, and there's a lot I think we can take from it, and hopefully you can shield yourself from being taken advantage of and your family members especially, so that they aren't swindled out of their money for really no good reason. So we're going to touch on that. I also want to talk about Japan. Are we Japan? Are we like Japan? Are we having problems similar to Japan? And I'm going to argue yes, we are Japan. And I'm going to argue why we are. We took steps very similar to Japan, and why the economic indicators and trends mirror, maybe not exactly, but very close, what happened in Japan after their real estate bubble burst in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I want to touch on a podcast question. We have a podcast question I want to get to, and then your questions, your comments. I want to hear from you. Okay, we have about 40 minutes left in the show, but it goes by quickly. Please get your call in sooner rather than later. And let's take a quick look at today's market. You have the S&P up 36 points, the NASDAQ up 103, the Dow up 236. It was really a good day for the market, the best day we've seen in a while, I would say. Since the late August rebound, right? So it's going to be interesting to see if this is the start of something positive, or is this just another oversold bounce? Because we certainly were oversold, and the question is, will the bounce be sustainable? And we don't have enough evidence yet, but this certainly was one positive day towards that step. But one day doesn't make a trend either. So that was the market overall today. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast and downloading every day. For some, this issue may be among the more influential factors when selecting investments. Managing your portfolio and your taxes, that's one of our talking points for Thursday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-992-99-CHART. Give us a call, 888-992-5461. Let's go to Rob in Atlanta. How you doing, Rob?
Hi, Justin. I have a general question about the market.
Okay.
Based on the historical data, it seems that almost most of the major correction or crashes happened in October. With that said, we know September is a bad month, but usually October is the month that usual markets crash, if it does. So I'm wondering, is it a good time now to pull some money from 401k to the money market, or, you know, do you see any evidence that it's a good idea to do this at this point?
Well, we've been pretty conservative for a while now. So, you know, we've been telling our clients and we've been telling people on air, now is time to be conservative. You know, how conservative you want to be is up to you. Now, is there going to be a crash in October? Odds are not over 50% that there is going to be a crash. It's certainly a possibility, and crashes usually happen after some weakness. It's not like they usually happen out of thin air. And we certainly have seen some significant weakness, and the credit markets are not very healthy, or not moving in a healthy direction. So, sure. I mean, if you're worried and you're a little scared, you know, let me know, or change your allocation. It's really up to you and what your risk tolerance is. Are you a long-term investor? Or are you willing to take the ride?
Yeah, basically, a lot of people say you should not touch your 401k and this and that, but, you know.
Well, that's to me, I don't like that advice. I don't think that's good advice. I think it's up to you, and this is what we do with our 401k clients and the companies we work with. We do that. We have them take a risk analysis questionnaire, give them a score of 1 to 99, and then we put them in models, and we run their investments according to their risk tolerance, the same way we do with IRAs for clients, etc. So based on that, it's all about investing according to your risk tolerance. If you can handle the volatility over time, you're going to do fine. But if the market goes down 20-30% and your account goes down 20-30%, you start freaking out because that's too much a volatility for your risk tolerance, you're going to make a rash decision. So it's all about who you are and what type of volatility you're able to handle.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you for your advice.
No problem. Thanks for calling in. That was Rob from Atlanta talking about his 401k. So let's talk a little bit about where are my notes? Oh, they got blown off my desk over here. Interesting. Okay. So my main talking point is about this new fiduciary rule. I don't know who is aware of this, but there's new rules coming down the pipe. New rules coming down the pipe relating to the 401k industry and just really the advisory industry as a whole. And small savers are really at the heart of this intense struggle that is gripping the financial advisory community for the past 5 years and now appears to be on the cusp of some type of a solution. And the issue is a simple one. Does the current regulatory environment leave savers at risk of getting investment advice that enriches their advisors at the saver's expense? Or does it foster an environment where everyone can get access to financial counsel no matter how much or how little money they have to invest? Basically saying, if you do things to ensure that the advisors aren't enriching themselves at the expense of the savers, is that going to stop small savers from getting advice? Now, some will argue yes, but I would argue no. And billions of dollars really swing in the balance. And advocates of this new rule say that it would impose a so-called fiduciary standard to anyone selling retirement products, maintain that those billions should go into the pockets of savers who are missing out on better returning investments and lower fee investments because of conflicted advice. Basically saying that right now there's so much conflict of interest in the industry because of basically commissions that investors are getting pitched products because they have high commissions, not because they're actually better for them. And the Department of Labor, which enforces these laws governing retirement plans, is attempting to impose something called the fiduciary duty on anyone selling investment products to a retirement plan, and that includes individual retirement accounts, such as IRAs. Now, the rule was first brought up in 2010, okay? And now it's finally coming to fruition. And the fiduciary rule is basically this. You have to put the client's interest first. And that's what we have to do. We're a registered investment advisor. We are held to a fiduciary standard. We have to put the client's interest first over our own. Whereas a traditional broker, they just have to make sure that the investment is suitable for you. No matter what the fees are, no matter how high a commission they get, as long as that investment is suitable for you, they could charge as much commissions as they want. Okay? So that's really the change in the rule. So after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and is this a good rule for the industry. Now, this is Invest Talk. Thanks for investing this hour with us. Give us a call. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. Now, our phone line is always open to your questions, whether you're new to investing or have a more complex question and have a lot of experience. We are here for you. All questions are accepted. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
I'm calling about a company called Horsehead Holdings. Ticker is ZINC, the word zinc. They just finished a really big plant. From what I understand, they have a pretty good management team. I was curious what your opinion on this company is for the future. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at Horsehead Holdings. This is a symbol of ZINC. They produce zinc and zinc-based products with the production facilities in Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Illinois, Tennessee, and Ontario, Canada. This stock has fallen out of bed like very few that I've seen in a while. Wow. It is gone from a high just last September of $15 and call it 50, oh no, sorry, high of $20.65, 75 cents. Now it's at $3.04. So it's down about 85% from its high in a little over a year. Pretty astonishing. Is it cheap? Sure, at these levels it's cheap. The big question is it going bankrupt? They're losing money at a dramatic rate. I'm trying to find if I see any news on them. This seems like a company that is down 11.7% today, down 41 cents to $3.03. It just looks weak. And the debt doesn't look gigantic, but I mean, this is extremely risky. I'm trying to see what the debt looks like. Their leverage doesn't seem too extreme. I'm trying to see if there's any news. I feel like there's got to be news or something on this thing. Interesting. Yeah, this is extremely risky. There's just it's the commodity space. Its shares are down. If you're looking for a company that's super, super cheap on a long-term basis and you're willing to lose everything on this, go for it. Because it looks like this is a company that the market is telling me that it's going bankrupt. That's what the market is telling me. Now I got to do a little more research to find some insight on why they think that, but that's generally what I'm seeing from this chart going down that dramatically in that short a period of time on that high of volume. This is one of those names where you think the commodity industry is going to turn around relatively soon, and you can make a bundle, but you also lose a lot very quickly. So I would stay away from it unless you're very, very willing to lose it all. That was ZINC, Horsehead Holdings. Now, I want to talk. I want to pick up our talking point today, and I discussed before last break about the new rules that are coming on the pipeline from the Department of Labor covering retirement accounts. And the big issue here are commissions and loads, right? And the fiduciary rule. And many financial advisors earn all or a portion of their income through commissions on products that they sell. Now, we as registered investment advisors, we're fee-based. We don't collect commissions. But many advisors do. And when the customers come to them looking for stock market advice or especially mutual fund advice, they might direct them into certain mutual fund classes where they get a load or they get maybe some back-end 12b1 fees, which most people that aren't in the industry don't understand. But basically, it's backdoor fees that they're getting without the owner of that fund, the investor, really seeing it. When in reality, they could be offered low-cost funds. For example, we look for the best low-cost but best-performing funds for our clients when we're putting them in mutual funds. Because we don't care about commissions or kickbacks. We don't take any of that. All we care about is getting the lowest fee for our client and the best funds and the best investments for our client. These advisors might also suggest whole life insurance rather than cheaper term life insurance. And that's what we always talk about. Don't buy whole life. People say whole life, it's an investment. No, it's not. It's an insurance contract. And the reason that advisors push whole life over term is because they get much higher commissions off whole life than term. But term, 9 times out of 10, is a much better product to be purchasing, and it's much cheaper. And it does what you need it to do, what insurance should do, is pay out a large claim in case of a death or an emergency or whatever. Now, the penny rule doesn't affect that insurance industry, but that's just another example of a conflict of interest. Now, in either case, one of these cases, the investment advice looks free to the investor. But in reality, over time, it costs the consumer a lot of money because they are invested in higher fee funds. And the Council of Economic Advisors estimated this type of conflict of advice costs retirement savers $17 billion in lost savings each and every year. Now, the Department of Labor rule wouldn't eliminate commissions. All it would do is make them disclose all fees and commissions and marketing fees and estimate the costs over time. And this will resist the urge for advisors that are based off commissions, based on loads, to enrich themselves at the expense of their client. So I think it's great. I think it's a great idea. We are hoping that it goes through because there is a lot of skepticism about advisors in the industry, and I think this would alleviate a lot of those concerns. And I really hope they go through. And if you want to put your 2 cents in, you know, call your local congressman, let them know you like this new DOL proposal. Now, don't get left on the outside looking in and become an InvestTalk insider. It's your key to loads of information that will help you make better investment decisions. And we have quick read info sheets on there, on annuities, on wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, real estate. We have ETF lists on all types of sectors and industries on the marketplace and asset classes. And it's all there for free. All you have to do is sign up now on investtalk.com.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Steve, enjoy listening to your show. 2 questions on REITs. SNH, which is Senior Housing Property Trust, and HCP Incorporated. How do you feel about those? Do you think it's a good time to go in or get out or what? Appreciate it. Thank you. Again, enjoy your show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. He's looking at SNH and HCP. These are two of the larger senior housing REITs out there. They own senior housing facilities, and it's a real. They're both real estate investment trusts. They pay large dividends, etc. And that is what he's looking at, because it's steady income, right? And fairly safe income to some degree. Maybe not principal, but the income. SNH right now yields 9.6%. And that's high because of the payout ratio. Remember, real estate investment trusts, they pay out 90% of their income, or what, how they classify income as FFO, funds from operation. And that's how they pay it out. That's how you get your dividend. And the dividend on SNH is about 9.6%, but that's because they have a huge payout ratio. They can do more, right? They can pay out more than 90%, but their minimum is 90%. And it seems like they're paying out more than 90%. And they're doing that by borrowing money and increasing their leverage. So I don't think that over the long term, that 9% is sustainable. Now, is a dividend for SNH sustainable? Sure, absolutely it is. And then there's HCP. And SNH has been growing rapidly, about 20%. It's a good REIT. But I wouldn't expect 9.6%. I would expect that to actually fall at some point soon. HCP's yield is 6.1%, and its payout ratio is also very high, which is very interesting. So both of them are very high. So I think over the long term, the what they're paying out is a little extreme, and they probably will come back down to earth once their credit markets start to wake up to the leverage that they're putting on their balance sheet, and that's exactly what HCP is doing as well. So both good companies. Which one would I buy? One or the other? I would probably go with HCP. They're less leveraged, and they have less debt. They're bigger. They're stronger. I would probably go with HCP. Maybe do a little bit of both, to be frank. But you have to be a long-term holder. If interest rates continue to rise, that's going to be a headwind. And realize this isn't ultra-safe. Don't think that these are ultra-safe investments. This is equity you're purchasing. And HCP, for example, has gone from almost $50 a share at the beginning of the year all the way down to $37. SNH has gone from 23.5 down to 16.2. And a similar drop could continue to happen. So don't think these are as safe as you might think. Let's go to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
Good. How are you, Justin?
I'm doing well. What can you do for you?
Good. I had some. I didn't hear you talk much about bond ladders, and I'm a little curious about what you would recommend about the term of each rung held.
Okay.
And just in general, what your thoughts are on them. And I'll take my your thoughts off the air.
Okay, thanks. I like the idea of bond ladder. We do that for our clients in our income program. And a bond ladder is basically this, is you purchase a bond, or maybe it's a CD at your bank, which right now, obviously, they're not yielding very much. But they start at, you go out a year, right? You buy a bond that matures in a year, and then a bond that matures in 2 years, and 3 years, and 4 years, et cetera, and you keep going out until, I guess, all your money that you've invested is exhausted. And then at each maturity, you go and invest in, so for example, you do 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, all the way out to maybe 7 years, right? And then a year passes, and that bond matures, and now you have six bonds that mature each year for the next 6 years. And then you go buy a bond with a seven-year maturity again. And then another year passes, and you do the same thing. And you just roll them over, and you do that bond ladder. And that's a strategy. And we do something, not exactly, but fairly similar. You know, we try to spread out the maturities for our clients. And I think that's a good idea. And I think 7 to 10 years is about the extreme you want to get. You know, it doesn't have to be on a yearly basis either. It could be 18 months. It could be 2 years. You know, you do one 2 years out, 4 years out, 6 years out, 8 years out, and 10 years, etc. So I think bond ladders are a great strategy. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And I would advise you, if you're trying to be conservative, just stay higher credit quality. Don't stretch yourself into, you know, really bad junk and try and stretch for yield. And that's, a lot of people are doing that right now because they need yield, they want yield, they're starving for yield, but they're taking too much risk to do that. And I think a bond ladder is a good strategy as long as you keep it fairly safe for investing your money in a conservative manner. Time for Invest Talk 101. When you buy and sell stocks, you sign on for an up and down ride. Now, sometimes gains or losses of value seem completely logical. And other times, you can't help but wonder what's going on. Like when a company announces earnings this quarter and then the stock price drops. You know, their earnings are great, but the stock still drops. So how does that make sense? Now, in general, it's best to ignore the very short-term movements, but trust your research. If you believe it's a strong company, it might be best to hold the stock for the long term. If you feel that their product and services are some of the best in the industry, or maybe they have an advantage that makes them the cheapest. For example, Walmart. They have a great advantage because they can negotiate based on volume, very low prices, etc. Now, of course, there's no guarantee that over time you're going to make money. Now, any long-term 10-year period plus, odds are the stock market's going to be higher. Very, very high probability. And over time, you'll learn to trust the facts, and those are technical and fundamental analysis. All right, so keep your eye on the prize, understand what your goals are, what your risk tolerance is, and the level of risk you're taking when you're making an investment. Match them up. It's important, very important. Otherwise, you're going to make rash decisions on each side. Right, the market goes up and you're not taking enough risk and you start to chase and you make bad decisions, and vice versa. You're taking too much risk, market goes down, you start to freak out and you sell too low. All right, so be aware of those pitfalls. Now that's Invest Talk 101, and if you have a question on any topic, give us a call. I want to hear from you, 888-99-CHART, or you can make a personal note that will come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Our podcast distribution is made possible every day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. If you're looking for some good books on investing, we have a whole library full. Check out our recommended books list. It's right there on investtalk.com, including Steve's book, of course, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor.
Let's go to Devinder in San Jose. How are you doing, Devinder?
All right. Can you check for me which one is better to buy, Visa card, Visa or Master?
Visa or MasterCard, I think they need no introduction. And they're pretty much the two biggest credit card payment processors in the world. MasterCard is a $102 billion market cap, and Visa is $153 billion. So Visa is about 50% larger. Their earnings are supposed to go up 20% this year, 14% next year. MasterCard is 9% this year, 18% next year. So certainly Visa has better growth. They both trade at the same P ratio, about 27. But MasterCard is more profitable, a lot more profitable. They have a return equity of 51%, where Visa's is only about 20%. So the big question is, are you looking for growth or are you looking for just strong profitability? MasterCard's dividend yield is about 0.7%, not much to write home about, and same with Visa. So they have the same dividend yield. You're not looking for anything there. Visa, no debt. MasterCard, a little bit of debt, but nothing to worry about. I would go with MasterCard, to be honest. Just because of their profitability is a little bit stronger, and you're paying the same PE ratio, and it's about double actually. So they're much more efficient with their profitability. It looks a little cheaper from my standpoint. Now, understand that these are both consumer stocks, and if you go into a recession, they're going to go down, right? So we've obviously had issues with the market. And is that, the question is that going to bleed into the market, the economy overall? And will that, that's obviously going to affect consumer spending and spending on credit cards, et cetera, right?
Okay.
So,
all
so
right,
just realize that. But I would go with MasterCard over Visa.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Devinder. Now let's get to a question that came in from our website, and you can do the same thing as Chris did. He said, Steve or Justin, love your show. I listen to it regularly on podcasts, and I was hoping you could provide some insight on a particular stock. I have had my eye on Lannett Corporation, ticker symbol LCI, for quite some time, and thought I missed the chance of a good entry after they announced news. Other acquisition shot the stock up in early September, but the past 2 days have really taken a bite out of their share price, and now I see it as a great entry point. Fundamentally, everything looks strong to me, but why the recent price drop? What do you think of Lannett, and where is a good entry? Thank you, and I look forward to having your response on the next podcast. So he's looking at Lannett Corporation, and they are a provider, a developer of generic versions of drugs that treat thyroid deficiency, migraines, epilepsy, glaucoma, and other conditions as well. Earnings grew 2% this year, 18% next year, but it's had a big jump over the past couple years. They made 43 cents a share in 2013, up 2015 to $4.04 a share. So it's a massive jump up. You know, you're talking 1,000% increase in earnings since 2013, just a couple years ago. 40% return on equity, no debt. Earnings growth is slowing. So it was a year ago, it was 100% or 400% earnings growth and 100% revenue growth year over year. Now it's slowing down, and that's all because of I believe acquisitions. They probably made some big acquisitions, and the reason that it's falling is because of the biotech space. It's really affecting the whole industry. And while they're not a biotech company, they own a lot of patents, and they've been purchasing a lot of patents, right? And they're probably increasing the cost of those drugs. Probably has to do with the fact that they're charging a lot of money. The increase in their earnings is probably because they're increasing the cost of their drugs, and they're buying up companies and patents and drugs that go out there and sell in the marketplace. So if the biotech sector continues to go down, which I think it will, I think the biotech bubble is bursting. I think Lannett will continue to go down. Where is my entry point? That's a good question. I'm gonna go. Give me 1 second. I'm going to go with about $30 a share. Is that $41.52? $30 a share is where I would start picking up shares of Lannett. Now, our hour is up. Steve and I thank you for hooking up with us every day. If you have a money topic you'd like to hear discussed, send me a note. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. I'm registered investment advisor Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.